whether a protection order was opened and served, HIV information and treatment, PEP information and treatment. We also track TB information, sexually transmitted infections, referrals, and whether our referrals were successful. So we track human rights violations, and then also the interventions that we've done to help those people who are experiencing issues with their human rights.
Survival Mode 101 is in samenwerking met GRIP, die Greater Rape Intervention Program in die Laagveld. Die gesprek is met Johanne Strydom en Taryn Lokotsch, die hoofuitvoerende bestuurder van GRIP.
Welcome terug. No, I'm joking. Welcome everybody to another episode of Survival Mode 101. I thought for a change today I'll do the intro. So yeah.
And Taryn has taught us a lot, but at least she's also learned a bit of Afrikaans.
Yep, bicky bicky.
During these few weeks. So yeah, Taryn, why don't you start us off with what we will be talking about today?
Yeah. So today we are going to be talking about Yone's favorite topic, stats and numbers.
Yay!
The stats and the numbers that we keep record of at GRIP.
So let's dive right into it, because numbers and stats might make me fall asleep. I'm joking. They're actually very interesting. There are very interesting stats and numbers today. So before we start, why don't you just tell us a bit more by what you mean when we talk about the stats and numbers? What are you referring to?
Yeah. So basically last week, if you remember, we had Lucia in studio with us. And Lucia is one of our M&E officers. So at GRIP, we have a dedicated team of M&E officers. And basically what they do is they capture all of the data from survivors' files. So there is loads and loads of information that we capture about each of our survivors. And this information that we capture is basically the stats that we are referring to. So we analyze all the information. Look at all the trends, and then we come up with the stats, the statistics. And then, yeah, what we do is we use those statistics then to make informed decisions. So where do we need an extra police station care room? Is there any police station care rooms that need to be open 24 hours? Is there any particular area where we need to do awareness raising, a school that we need to go to, all those kinds of things. So, yeah, that's the...
And you also send them to your funders.
Oh, yes. And obviously the stats are super important because it's also obviously how we track the success of a program. So is the program being implemented effectively and is it successful? We look to the stats to see that. And then obviously we send all of that on to our funders as well so that they can see exactly how many cases we're dealing with and the work that we're doing.
And then what stats are you keeping record of?
Yeah, so we try and capture as much information as possible so that we have a very thorough understanding of the GBV issues that are being faced in our areas of implementation and so that we can find ways to ensure we support the community effectively in what we're doing. So examples are we capture the number of DV cases we see.
What's DV?
Domestic violence.
Okay. Yeah. And SV?
And SV, the number of sexual violence cases and rape cases that we're seeing, whether a protection order was opened and served, HIV information and treatment, PEP information and treatment. Remember, PEP is the post-exposure prophylaxis that prevents HIV and AIDS. We also track TB information and treatment. So all of our survivors are screened for TB, sexually transmitted infections, referrals, and whether our referrals were successful. So some survivors may need to see a psychologist. Some may need to see a doctor. And then obviously also we're very active in the community doing awarenesses. So we also track the number of awarenesses that we're doing, how many people we're reaching in our awareness. And then, yeah, you've all listened to Temba before. So obviously we're also tracking all the data from his program, the Human Rights and Advocacy Program. So we track human rights violations and then also the interventions that we've done to help those people who are experiencing issues with their human rights.
And then before we look at the current stats, have you seen a decline in any of the stats?
Sadly, no. Yeah, the stats vary from care room to care room. But what we're kind of seeing overall is that the number of GBV cases that's being reported to GRIP is growing. Our hope is that the increase in numbers is because of the awareness work that we're doing in the community. So we are really trying to get rid of, you know, the stigma and the discrimination in the community around gender-based violence. Letting people know the importance of reporting, where they can report, where they can find GRIP. The realist in me says that, GBV is a problem and that it's becoming worse and worse. But we're trying to keep positive and thinking that maybe the work that we're doing is really effective and people are, taking the services that we're offering and coming to our hospitals and reporting more and more.
But I also think a lot has to do with what Sir Price said to us. He's part of the team that goes out to do field work, where they go out to house and knock on your door and see what's happening inside. And that's how you sort of like find a lot of your victims as well, because you notice something's not right here and then sort of like makes you come in so you can hear what's happening,
Yeah, exactly. So we are, door-to-door campaigning is something that we really believe in. So our PPPREV team, which is Surprise's team that does the prevention programs, they do door-to-door campaigning, getting people to join their prevention programs. But also we have a team of GBV ambassadors, and their sole job basically is to go out in the community every day, do an awareness at a clinic, do an awareness at a school, and educate the community about GBV and how to get help and where to get help and why to get help.
And you've seen a rise in GBV, as you said now, and that's when we speak about a trend. I just want to make sure the listener understands. When we do refer to a trend, it means sort of like something in the rise, like a crop top.
So examples of trends that we're seeing. So a trend is basically, like a pattern. So we're noticing a pattern of things. So an example is we are seeing a steady increase in the number of unknown perpetrators. Which we didn't see before. We saw most people were violated by somebody that they know and trust. We're also seeing, unfortunately, an increase in the number of people reporting after 72 hours. So these are the kinds of trends that we're trying to see. Is there an increase at a specific hospital? Like, for example, Tinswalo Hospital at the moment. We're seeing more and more cases being reported at Tinswalo. But Mkhondo, we're seeing lower numbers of cases. So these are the sort of patterns, trends that we try and analyze.
So if we can speak about the actual numbers now, did you have any examples for us?
Yeah, so I thought if we can take Rob Ferreira and Temba, because they are kind of the closest to Radio Laughvelt and maybe our listeners will know of Rob Ferreira and Temba Hospital. So Rob Ferreira and Temba Hospital see sexual violence and rape cases. And if we go year to year, it's quite eye-opening. So Temba in 2019 saw 287 rape cases. In 2020, 362. In 2021, 402. In 2022, 392. So, if you look at the trend there, it's slowly going up. And since April, which is the start of our reporting year, we have already seen over 100 cases. So that basically averages out to one case per day. By the end of 2023, if we look at how the numbers are rising, we are going to see well over 400 cases. Which is quite, it's scary to know that a day doesn't go by without a rape case.
And that's only the people that are coming forth and saying, this has happened to me.
That's exactly it. It doesn't include all the people who are keeping quiet, suffering in silence, which is very sad. Rob Ferreira, even closer to home, in 2029, my gosh, we're not even there yet, Taryn. In 2019, 134. In 2020, 267. In 2021, 254. In 2022, 260. So again, we're seeing like a slow and steady rise. Since the start of our reporting year, we've already seen over 75 cases. And if we average that out, it's about 6 cases a week. So again, we're back to almost a case every single day. If the current trend continues, we're going to see over 300 cases this year, which is 40 cases more than we saw last year. So it can't continue like this. And as you say, this is only the survivors that manage to reach our care rooms and report.
Yeah, there's a lot of people not coming forth.
There's a lot of people not coming forward.
But you've said when we started, you've seen an increase in some of the trends. And one of the trends are that people are not reporting within 72 hours, although we practically beg them to do so.
Yeah, so it's very difficult. So in our TCC hospitals, we're seeing about and TCC, the Thuthuzela Care Centre, sorry, so that's Robs and Temba. We've seen that about 30% of our survivors only report after 72 hours. And Joanne is going to ask me why.
Yes.
the truth is we never really know exactly why. But I think a lot of it has to do with the stigma in the community. A lot of people are nervous to report what happened to them. The perpetrator may be known to them, and so they don't want to report it. They may be threatened. So they may, the perpetrator may have said, if you tell, then I'll burn your house down. And this happens. It happens all the time. And I also just think, in cases where it's really young children as well, it takes some time for the caregivers to notice that something is not right. So, there's a lot of reasons why we're seeing cases only being reported after 72 hours.
We've also said that one of the rising trends or increasing trends or what was the word now? Is it a rise in trends?
Yeah.
Yes. Is that you and I, before we did this podcast, well, this episode, previously we said mostly the perpetrator, but it's not the fact, it's not actually like that anymore.
Yeah. So since I started at GRIP, which was last year in February, it's kind of been consistent that 60% of cases, it's a known perpetrator. So you know the person, you trust them, you invite them into your home or you go out with them and you don't think that they're going to harm you. And that was 60% of cases. But weirdly, in the last 2 or 3 months, we're seeing a spike in unknown perpetrator cases where women are being attacked and violated by people that are not known to them.
And is that because you're at the wrong place at the wrong time and the guy the man or the woman, I mean, it's everyone, just sees that you are alone, or has it been premeditated, or how does it work?
Yeah, so you never really know. So in a case of an unknown perpetrator, it can basically be a stranger. So it's somebody that you don't know, that you don't recognize. That person could just be, you could be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it could just be a random event. That person could may well have been stalking you, looking at your habits. Do you walk the same way every day at the same time? That kind of thing. It's scary, this trend of unknown perpetrator. Although known perpetrators, even worse. But with unknown perpetrators, it's scary because you won't recognize the person that's harmed you. So your mind is so strong that you will block out, what they look like, what their voice sounds like. Do they have long hair? Do they have short hair? Do they have facial hair? Do they not? What color is their eyes? And these are the questions that, SAPS or whatever will ask a survivor, and more often than not, a survivor, you won't remember that kind of stuff. So it's very difficult to catch unknown perpetrators. So that does scare me slightly.
And you've seen a trend in age groups. It's also very easy with the data you collect to identify which age groups are most vulnerable.
Yeah, so we can confidently say that the most vulnerable age group is definitely AYP, which stands for adolescent young people. This is people between the ages of 10 to 24. Although the number of children that are being sexually abused is also horrifying, and we're also seeing sort of more and more young kids that are being harmed. In 2022, we had well over 100 cases of 5 to 9-year-olds. Whose caregivers obviously then came and reported to GRIP that something was wrong. And this is also sadly the age group where we see the most males. So it's a lot of little boys being harmed.
I'm actually shocked too, yeah. Not that, well, any rape case will shock me, but I mean, obviously with the boys as well, it's terrible.
And 5 to 9, I mean, you're so innocent and you're so young. Yeah, so for someone to take advantage of you, it's really not, not normal. That said, we see all ages, we see all races of people. Rape does not discriminate. So, I think it's important that, no one is
safe. Not to be very a doom prophet.
No, but no one is like untouchable.
Don't ever think, that's on the way with my hubby at me.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen. But apart from that, you also have other care rooms like in Lydenburg, Sabi, Bushbuck Ridge. Where else?
Yeah, so in Bushbuck Ridge, we are in Tinswalo and Matikwana hospitals. And then, as you say, Sabi in Lydenburg. And then we are also in the Gatsebande district. So we are in Carolina and Mkhondo Hospital as well.
And how are those numbers looking?
Oh, gosh. So our other care rooms, I'm afraid to say the numbers are even more scary. So yeah, if we combine them together and we look at the care rooms that we have in those areas, we saw well over 1,000 cases in the previous year. So yeah, that's a lot of rape cases. From October 2022, we've already seen over 800 cases. So again, from 2022 to 2023,
like
there's going to be a slight
three
increase.
Rapes a day.
Yeah.
And it's like we said, it's only the people who come forth.
It doesn't include the people that don't. So yeah, there's never a day that, you know, our first responders are sitting in our care rooms and not doing anything.
Or just having a cup of coffee and relaxing.
There's always people coming for help. And this doesn't include domestic violence cases. This is sexual assault cases.
So
DVs, if we had to add DV onto these numbers, I'm scared people would stop listening.
No, I don't think so. But yeah, there's one stat that's not too bad.
Yeah, so at least if we look on the positives, we can't stop rape. But what we can do is, you know, help the survivors after the fact and make sure that they get all of the medical care that they need and all of the psychosocial support that they need. So at our TCC hospitals, we have a 90% PEP completion rate, which is really awesome because that means that 90% of the people...
That's basically everyone.
90% of the people that are... Well, 90% of the people that are eligible for PEP.
Yes.
So those people who report within 72 hours are prevented from contracting HIV and AIDS. And then, yeah, in Bushbuck Ridge, Sabi, Lydenburg and Gatsebande, it's even higher. It's 95%, which is something that's really commendable. I'm really proud of the first responders working in those areas because we've basically reached the goal of the 95-95-95 strategy, which is to make sure 95% of the population know their HIV status, 95% of the people are initiated on ART, and which is antiretroviral therapy, the treatment for HIV and AIDS, and 95% of people have their viral load suppressed and are able to live a healthy life. So, although we can't stop it, we can, you know, contribute positively towards making sure that you have a life after, you know, you're healthy and that you do, you manage to go on.
And that you find the right support.
Exactly. That's, as much as the medical and the PEP and the emergency contraceptive is important, obviously the psychosocial support is just as vital.
Well, looking at all of the stats and the numbers, my favorite, no, I'm just joking with you. What do the courts do?
Oh, okay. So the court stats.
So let's get really negative right now.
Yeah, the court stats is a difficult one for me.
I hope I don't get sued for being sarcastic towards the courts.
No, it's not easy. Look, I mean, the court doesn't have an easy job either, because there is always the you're innocent until proven guilty, and so, you know, even if you are a rapist or whatever, unfortunately, you still do have rights, and so as much as I can fight things like rapists or alleged rapists getting bail, it's not something that I can stop altogether, because that's not how the law works. But GRIP is definitely working on improving things at the courts, and we really are at the forefront of advocating for our survivors' rights. Our HRA program is also centered on human rights, and they are very active lately in the courts, supporting rape cases, supporting cases where there's abuse of sex workers, all that kind of stuff. I think the issue with the courts is the fact that court cases take so long.
Yes, it's like, I think we spoke about it when Tombi Futi was here in one of our episodes. Number one, it's so difficult with a rape case, because I always feel like it's unfair, because you have to prove that you've been raped.
Yep.
And number two, it's not like in Suits or The Good Wife or any of those shows, Law and Order, where you go to court and the next, like in a few hours' time, you get your... Uitspraak.
Your judgment.
Yes, your judgment. You get the results of the court case. It can literally take up to 20 years.
Yeah, it's going on and on. So at the moment, we have some cases on the court roll that were first seen in 2016 or 2017. And I think it's really frustrating for our survivors. I mean, some of them may have been, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old when this event happened. You know, they're now a teenager. Like, how many times have they had to be dragged back to court?
They can't remember.
That's exactly it. So at the time you were a child, you would have given your statement in the child-friendly room. Now you're basically, you're a teenager, but you are, you know, you're moving into...
It's also like 7 years later, 10 years later.
You're moving into adulthood. Now are you expected to appear in court? I mean, how do you remember everything that happened? And it's like secondary trauma, tertiary trauma, like it goes on and on and on because you're constantly being forced to tell relive. Your story and to relive what happened to you. So I think that for me is
And also if
is
anything
an issue.
Is off, like if you said the person was wearing a green shirt instead of a blue shirt, they sort of like say,
you've got to have your story straight, which is why our pre-court training is so important because we really do not that by no means do we coach our survivors, but we definitely do make them understand that, the difference between the truth and the lies.
Yes.
But they really need to tell it as it happened.
And not to add spice.
To tell it as it happened, because as it happened is enough to put their perpetrator
away.
But the conviction rate is low. It's really low. So it's sitting at about, I want to say 5 to 10%, but it's much closer to 5%. Which is really concerning. Another thing we're working on is the fact that a lot of alleged rapists or sexual abusers get off with a warning, which is something that I feel really strongly about. I don't understand bail. Even though it's the way the law works, but I definitely don't understand the warning. So we are working with a legal support team just to try and see, I feel like that there should be faster, harder, harsher sentences for things like rape, especially in the cases where it's, you know, young, small children that are involved.
Those people can't go back on the streets and just live their best lives.
No, they can't. And while these cases are taking so long, the sad truth is that majority of the perpetrators are on bail. And so that is exactly what they're doing. Like, yes, they may have to report to a police station here and there and report
That's
at
not
court.
Difficult.
But I mean, they...
It's not the worst thing.
They're free for all intents and purposes whilst the court case is going on.
But again, this is not to make you negative or... It's just to say that, listen, when you do have a rape case, it's an unknown perpetrator, you might not get justice, but... That's why we are here. That's why we're here. That's why GRIP's there. It's to give you the support you need and that's why you become a survivor. Because it's like you said, we don't believe in staying a victim.
Mm.
You're going to survive this and we are going to help you survive it.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I've had to come to the realization I can't stop rape and GBV altogether. But certainly we can make it better for all of the survivors that manage to reach us. We can ensure that you get comprehensive care, our full GRIP circle of care, access to our full team, you know, just so that all of your emotional, psychosocial support needs are met. Should your case go to court, we'll walk the entire journey with you.
You'll never be alone.
No.
The listeners have met our full team. I'm saying our because I also feel like I'm part of GRIP. I'm the spokesperson.
You are.
I think you've met the whole team and all of these people are more than capable, more than capable in helping you. I mean, I don't think there's a better team.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think basically, most of our management have been on the podcast. I still need to get Nomshado, our lovely program manager, who's like my rock. I need to get her to agree to come to do a podcast with us. But otherwise, you've met the management team. We're all seriously passionate about what we do. And we really give our all. We give our whole heart to the cause. If something has happened to you or is happening to you and you're listening, come and see us.
Or call us,
yeah.
Taryn, it's been... this episode has been a bit hard. I think the stats are not always the nicest thing to look at.
No.
Even though, you know, we talk about the core training and all the great things you do, it's difficult when the stats still do go up. But like we said, we're going to stay positive and say it's because of all the hard work you guys are putting in creating awareness.
Yeah. And no, definitely. We always got to take a glass half full approach.
Yes. Not half empty. So thanks so much for everything and your notes. Your notes were the winner for today.
Awesome. Thank you. Oh, thanks everybody for listening. And yeah, if you have any questions or queries or anything about the stats or GRIP, or if you do want to contribute to GRIP in any way whatsoever, then yeah, please reach out to us. Yeah, we're always willing to listen and to give more information if it's what you need.
Yes, and again, I think we just want to say boa boa danki for Coach Peter and all of the athletes, the comrade athletes. They all chipped in together, and I think they filled up all of the space that there was for the care packages.
Yeah, I mean, on the topic of stats and numbers, like the number of things that we got from the comrades community, which is, it's my community, UNH's your community as well. I mean, we are also runners ourselves. Yeah, it's amazing the support that we received. We were able to make, I think it was 50 to 60 care packs from all the stuff we received, with a few extras, with a few extra items for other care packs. And that's really going to touch the lives of the 60 survivors that those care packs go to. So a huge thank you to everybody that was involved.
Yes, and Coach phoned me in the week, last week, and he said, listen, people are still bringing things for the care packages, and it's so wonderful. And it's like I always say, biki biki mok boy. You might think, oh, just one toothbrush, it's not going to change anyone's life. You would be surprised.
Yeah, you would be surprised, because if each person brings one toothpaste or one toothbrush or one soap or one thing of sanitary pads, if each person does that and there's a large group of people, it makes such a difference to GRIP and our survivors.
So, yeah, just again, thanks so much to the athletes and to Mr. I always say Meneer Schmidt because he used to coach me, but Coach Peter from the Marathon Club. Yeah, we were so lucky. So, yeah, biki biki mok ba. If you feel it in your heart, I always end like this and say, like, if you've got nappies, if you've got clothing, I mean, it's winter, people are sleeping next to the fire, houses are burning down, you know, it's getting cold. If you've got blankets, anything, literally anything will help. And even if it's just one of those things, you know, it's going to make a difference in someone's life. Taryn, thanks so much stats. I think next week we'll be back with something a bit more positive.
We'll have to make next week's episode fun. We'll make a promise to our listeners. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Dankie, jullie.